your host, Emily. I am glad you're here. This little podcast is a safe space to talk about the movies we love, the good and the bad, acknowledging their issues and celebrating their successes with a healthy dose of nostalgia thrown in for good measure. And because I'm a librarian by day and don't need an excuse to talk books, at the end of our conversation, I'll give you a few book recommendations you might like if this movie sounds like your cup of tea. Before we dive into today's movie pick, 1990s Tremors, a quick ask. If you like the podcast and want a free and super easy way to support what I do, please consider rating or reviewing the podcast wherever you listen. You can also just share the podcast with someone or someones you know that you think might enjoy the fun as well. Word of mouth marketing. I would be ever so appreciative. So today we are talking, I've talked about Tremors on this podcast before. It is one of my favorite comfort movies. I love it when I pull it up on my Vudu or Fandango at home or whatever it is called now, because I did purchase it on there. And it's like, do you want to watch it again? Because I probably watch this every couple months, and I'm not exaggerating about that. This is the movie that I put on to make me laugh, that I can kind of just zone out and really enjoy. And I have loved this one for years. It was probably, though, about 5 years ago when I saw it again for the first time in a while. And then I just fell madly in love with it and thought, I think this is my movie. This is that comfort movie for me. So if you're tired of me talking about Tremors, I apologize, but we've not done a deep dive into Tremors before. One thing I really enjoy about Tremors, even though I've never seen them, is how they keep making them. So there's a sequel, Tremors 2 Aftershocks, which was released in 96. A second sequel, Tremors 3 Back to Perfection, came out in 01, followed by a prequel, Tremors 4, The Legend Begins, in 04. If any of them that you could watch, that is the one that I would probably watch, because I would like to kind of know the context. Well, I kind of, sort of would like to, we'll talk about it, know the context of how it all started, but that might be the one that I would go to. These three sequels were all made with direct involvement from S.S. Wilson, Brent Maddock, and Ron Underwood at Stampede Entertainment. And as you will learn here in just a few, they are the creative geniuses behind Tremors. Following an 11-year gap, Tremors 5, Bloodlines, was released in 2015 with the franchise's sixth inclusion, Tremors, A Cold Day in Hell, which came out in 2018. These two films were made by Universal 1440 Entertainment. I have not heard of that before, without any involvement from the Stampede Entertainment. So these are really kind of the sequels, not made from the original company. All Tremors sequels thus far have been released direct to video without a theatrical release, which is not surprising. Though Tremors 2 Aftershocks did receive a brief, limited theatrical run. Another direct to video sequel, Tremors Shrieker Island, was released in October 2020. And in 2003, the franchise spawned a television show titled Tremors the Series. I was not familiar with that. The show aired in 03 on the Sci-Fi Channel, but was canceled after one season. A 60-minute pilot for a second television series, also titled Tremors, was filmed in 2017, but no further episodes of this show were ever filmed. I don't actually think that this would make a very good TV show. You meet the creature, you meet the monster, you don't want to keep dealing with them in perpetuity, you know, forever and ever. You want to kind of fight them and then it be done. So I don't see how it would really go on beyond one season. Have you seen any of the Tremors sequels? I only believe in franchise sequels. We talked about this way back when I started the podcast in season one, when we were talking Disney movies, that I choose to believe that they are not even in existence, the Disney sequels to the classic animated features. So the other Aladdin movies that came out, in my brain, do not exist, because sometimes you don't get the same voice actors. The animation isn't the same. It's just a poor representation of something that you could tell artists and storytellers put a lot of time into in the original. So I just don't believe in them outside of franchises. So like James Bond, John Wick, Mission Impossible, those big things. I love sequels. Keep that story going for me. I absolutely love it. But outside of that, the budget is just never impressive, and it's always a bit of a letdown. Another reason that I think we should talk about this is this renaissance of the Sandworm. Have you gone to see Dune yet? Or have you sat at home and seen Dune 1 and then gone to the theaters to see Dune 2? I hope that you did pay money at the theater to see it, because I do firmly believe that those movies are best experienced in really large theaters with amazing sound systems. As I was seeing the second one, though, there was at one point I turned to Watson, who I was at the theater at, and I was like, it's so loud. And I felt so old in that moment. Like, why is it so loud? Can't they turn it down? But the ominous booming music that they play is just genius and really sets a really cool atmosphere and tone, and actually becomes a bit of a character within the movie. But you, of course, in that movie have these giant sandworms that come out of the ground. They don't have anything that necessarily shoots out of their mouth like a tremor, but they also are guided by vibration, and so you have to walk funny in the in the desert so that you don't have a pattern and truck the sandworms. My favorite thing in the world is in the second one, they show you how they ride the sandworms. Had a lot of questions. I do really appreciate Tori, who I work with at the library. She read the books so that she would know how they got on and off of the sandworms. And apparently to get off the sandworm, you just have to wait till they get tired. And I, what if they don't get tired at the destination that you're trying to, I have a lot of questions about that too. Or how they got the woman on the chair on top of the sandworm, because was she using the like ice pick things to get on? Lots of questions. This will probably make no sense to you if you've not seen the movie. Watch the movie and then come back and say, yeah, Emily, I too want to know the answers to these questions. So it's kind of fun to be talking about a movie with another sandworm in it. We're not going to talk tons about the sandworms, because I find the people absolutely more fascinating. But before we dive into the context of the movie, let's take a listen to the trailer.
Perfection. A scorched outpost in the middle of nowhere.
You know how close I am to leaving this place right now?
How close?
Maybe that's why Val and Earl decided to leave town.
Oh, whoa, 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 whoa.
Hey! That's Edgar Deans.
They just picked the wrong day to do it.
Jeez.
You guys better get the hell out of here. There's a killer on the loose.
Who could be doing it?
Is that a snake?
I'll give you boys $5 for this. 20.
That's how they get you. They're under the ground.
What the hell? Things. How could they eat a whole station wagon?
But where do they come from?
I vote for outer space. No way these are local boys.
You see, they're headed right for us.
No Richter scale can measure it.
They're coming!
No scientist can explain it.
Bert, they're under the ground!
You didn't get penetration even with the alpha gun.
Run, run!
And no one knows what to call it.
Megaworms or suckers or suckoids.
Now this valley is just one long smorgasbord.
Now, it's up to Val and Earl to save the world.
That's one big mother.
Who died and made you Einstein?
And they know just what to do. Flip for it.
Damn.
Kevin Bacon. Fred Ward. Tremors.
So Tremors was directed by Ron Underwood and was written by S.S. Wilson and Brent Maddock and Ron Underwood. So he had played a part in that too. Tremors appears to be Underwood's first full-length feature film, which he followed up with City Slickers, Heart and Soul with Robert Downey Jr., Speechless with Gina Davis and Michael Keaton, and Mighty Joe Young. You know, that one about the giant gorilla. He also did The Adventures of Pluto Nash with Eddie Murphy. He then kind of went on to direct a lot of TV, which that seems to be a trend. I feel like we talk a lot about directors who either started in feature films and went to TV or vice versa, which kind of surprises me a little. What is it like going from feature film to single episodes? I mean, but he did a lot of TV. Late in the game, he directed 5 episodes of Grey's Anatomy, 17 episodes of Once Upon a Time, which I think I think we should talk about sometime. Did you watch Once Upon a Time? That was a show that I think it was on Sunday nights. The Weirdos, which is Watson and Jessica and Valerie. You've met them all on the podcast here. We would be texting each other, all watching in our respective homes, texting each other about the episodes. I really miss that we haven't had a show like that in a while. Watson and I do it on Tuesday nights with Will Trent and The Rookie. But we've not had a group viewing of a TV show in quite a while. It was not good. And there was a lot of continuity errors. We actually were hoping... We wanted to petition to them to see if they would hire us so we could help with the continuity of the show. But it was just that guilty pleasure that we absolutely loved. And he also did single episodes of some of my favorite yet obscure TV shows. Do you remember No Tomorrow? It was a one-season show about a scientist guy who was very attractive who discovers that an asteroid is coming towards the Earth and is going to destroy the Earth. So he quits his job and starts to live life because he knows exactly when this asteroid's supposed to hit. He's going to live his life as joyfully and fulfillingly as he possibly can. And he meets this girl and he's trying to convince her that he's not crazy and that there's really an asteroid coming. It was really cute. I really liked it. There's also Reaper, which I don't remember the full premise of the movie, except that this guy starts to deal with the devil, but funny. That's all I've got for you. And Brain Dead, that had Aaron Tveit from Broadway in it. And I think that was the only reason I watched that. But they didn't do very well. There weren't a ton of seasons of those TV shows, but I loved them. And I thought that was kind of cool that he also wrote for them and directed them. S.S. Wilton and Brent Maddock must be creative partners. Again, we hear that a lot on here because their writing credits are basically identical, but are kind of fun as well. No, not only did they help write all of the Tremors movies, that at least were in that before the Universal 1440. They wrote all of those, but also Short Circuit, Batteries Not Included, Ghost Dad, and Wild Wild West with Will Smith. And apparently Wilson and Maddock came up with the general plot of Tremors in the 80s when they were working on creating safety videos for the U.S. Navy. How odd is that? Isn't that amazing? Man, I tell you, this is my favorite part of the podcast is reading all of this production information. They were working on getting footage and they end up climbing up onto these like giant rocks and had the thought of like, what if there was something that wouldn't let us off the rocks? So that is what started it all. So they start plotting out this horror movie with the working title Land Sharks, which I find hilarious and part of me kind of wishes they had kept it. And then they start talking to their pal, Ron Underwood, who is working on documentaries for National Geographic. And he then starts to use his like zoology background to start making the monster a little more realistic and not as campy. Short Circuit ended up being a pretty big hit for Underwood. So then Wilson and Maddock go shopping that idea for Tremors. Since they had Underwood helping, they're like, okay, let's shop this out. They ended up having to change the title because SNL came up with a skit called Land Sharks. And so they changed it to Beneath Perfection. Perfection is the town in Nevada, the fictional town where this is set. We're going to talk a lot about Perfection here in a minute. Finally finishing the script in 1988. So they begin filming in 89 and filming lasted for about 50 days. Principal photography took place around Lone Pine, California, which is kind of between Sequoia National Park and Death Valley, almost directly east of Fresno. And then they built the fictional town of Perfection, Nevada from scratch. It's not like that was a hardship. You got to watch the movie to understand that there's there's not a lot to Perfection, Nevada. The movie, of course, stars Kevin Bacon as Valentine Val McKee. He's a handyman and jack of all trades. He has his partner, not like life partner, but just a bromance with this dude named Earl to make money. And Earl is played by Fred Ward. He's kind of the straight man to Kevin Bacon's goofy man. He's a little older, a little wiser. We have Finn Carter, who plays Rhonda LeBeck. She's this graduate student in geology who is out in and near Perfection studying seismology of the area. She's got seismographs all around. Michael Gross plays Burt Gummer. You'll know Michael Gross from Family Ties. He played the dad on Family Ties. He is a conspiracy theorist and prepper. And he plays it so well, so straight and so kind of manic that you love him. He is married to Heather, played by Reba McEntire, and she is not the same as Bert. She's kind of calm and collected and rational, so it's a fun pair. We have Bobby Jacoby, who plays Melvin Plug. He's just this local boy who is constantly annoying everybody and getting himself into trouble. Charlotte Stewart as Nancy Sterngood. She's an artist who lives in perfection. She has a daughter named Mindy, played by Ariana Richards, who is also in Jurassic Park. So she's got this horror screaming thing down really well. Miguel is this local resident. He has, I believe, like a cattle farm. He's played by Tony Gennaro. Richard Marcus is Nestor Cunningham. We don't know a lot about Nestor. We see him a couple times. Spoiler, he does not make it through the movie because he makes some really poor life choices when the creatures start to come. But all we know is that he wasn't going to be there the next day. That's kind of the only thing we hear. That Earl and Val are trying to determine how they're going to get their odd jobs done. And they're like, well, we have to do that today because Nestor is not going to be there tomorrow. But he can't get out of town. We're going to talk about it. So he's going to be there. Victor Wong is Walter Chang. He's the owner of the local market in Perfection. Sorry. He is also way back towards the beginning of this podcast. We talked about Three Ninjas. If you haven't watched Three Ninjas, please do so. Go back and listen to that episode. He plays the grandpa and Three Ninjas, but he's the store owner here. I've got some questions. Bibi Besh is Megan Wallace, the local doctor's wife. Conrad Bachman as Jim Wallace, the town doctor. You have Sunshine Parker as Edgar Deems. He's another local resident. He is actually killed right at the beginning of the movie. You have Old Fred, played by Michael Dan Wagner, who literally just plays dead at the top of a electrical tower, which would be just an interesting. What did you do on the movie set today? I had no lines. John Goodwin is Howard. He's a construction worker that doesn't make it. And John Pappas as Carmine, who is also a construction worker that doesn't make it. And that's all of the cast. That's the entirety of the cast. And that's one reason why I really like this movie, is that it is so contained. Everything happens in this one location, basically, with these the small group of people. And I just really enjoy that there's not a lot of extras. There's not a lot of background noise, in a sense, of stuff going on. It is just these people in this really small town. Tremors had a budget of $6.4 million. It opened on January 19th, 1990, the only movie to release that day, apparently, because it said it had no competition. And it debuted at number 5, though, which I thought was a little funny. In the U.S. box office behind Born on the 4th of July, Tango and Cash, The War of the Roses, and Internal Affairs. It grossed a little over $3.7 million in its opening weekend, and it would go on to make about $16.6 million, but was kind of considered a box office flop. I mean, it made $10 million on top of its budget, so it's not too bad, you know, but it did not get the press and the enthusiasm and attendance at the theaters that they thought it was going to. The creators actually blamed the marketing campaign and a really cringy theatrical trailer for people not coming out to see it. While only a modest hit at the box office, Tremors went on to become a massive hit on home video purchases, rentals, and television, becoming one of the most rented films of 1990. What else came out in the year 1990? I didn't bother to do the research to go back and see if we've done any other movies in 1990. I'm not familiar. We maybe talked about it a little bit as a part of other episodes, like when I did summer blockbusters or the romantic comedies, but I don't remember reading you this list before. So number one at the box office in 1990 was Ghost, making just over $505 million. Next was Home Alone. That was number two. Number three was Pretty Woman. Number four, Dances with Wolves. Number five, Total Recall. Number six, Back to the Future Part 3. Number seven, Die Hard 2. Number eight, Presumed Innocent. Number nine, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And number 10, Kindergarten Cop. Do we need to talk about Kindergarten Cop? I think maybe we need to talk about that one. What I really like about this list is how many standalone movies there are on it, or the first in a sequel, not knowing there was, or in a series, not knowing there was going to be sequels. I mean, all of them, except for, of course, Back to the Future Part 3 and Die Hard 2, are the first time out. They're original properties at that point for the most part. Did we might have talked about this actually with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I do remember talking about that one when we went through 90s movies. So Tremors has an 88% on the tomato meter on Rotten Tomatoes and a 75% audience score, which is so backwards and absolutely amazing. 88% of critics gave this gem of a cheesy horror film a thumbs up. So the consensus reads an affectionate throwback to 1950s creature features. Tremors reinvigorates its genre tropes with a finely balanced combination of horror and humor, which is completely and absolutely true. You're not going to be disappointed when you put this on. You're going to have a really good time. MovieOn.com, do you remember them? We talked about them in the last episode on, was it Lucky Number 11? They called it horror fun for the whole family, and that is also true. There is some choice language in this. They actually cut back on it a little bit. That's going to be in the interesting tidbits. But overall, it's not overly gruesome. It's not overly gory. There's a lot of humor in it. So I think this is a really good one for the whole family. Roger Ebert gave the film 3.5 out of 4 stars, admitting he was embarrassed he enjoyed it so much, saying Tremors succeeds in the fact that it puts its focus on fun characters instead of the creatures attacking them, and called it a goofy, dumb, fun movie. Man, you got it right, Mr. Ebert. This time you got it right. So I love that. I love that 88% for the critic score and only 75% for the audience score. I kind of wonder if people seeing it now might, it is a little cheesy and it's got actually it holds up really well in the technical side of things, but there is a cheesiness to it that they don't get the humor as much now, maybe. I don't know. I think you should watch it and I think you should enjoy it. So what is Tremors about, just in case you haven't seen it? So out in the middle of nowhere, Nevada, sits a little town called Perfection. It has a population of what I can gather of about 14 people or so. So there's these handymen, Val and Earl, who are getting really tired of doing odd jobs in the small town. They kind of get all the nasty jobs like trash pickup, and they have to like pump out septic tanks. It's pretty nasty. So they decide, you know what, we want to get out of this town. If you can even call it that, this stopover, this bump on the road. And they decide that they're going to hit the road to the nearest city of Bixby, which is about 30 miles away or so. So they pack up all of their belongings. They get in their truck. They head out. They almost get stopped because Nancy, who is the local artist, she's like, hey, guys, I need you to help me build some kilns. I'll pay you for it. I'll give you food. I'll even give you beer, which is the part that almost stops them in their tracks. But they're like, no, no. And they push on through and they're so very proud of themselves. But they don't get very far because just past the sign that they've crossed out of Perfection, their plans really start to fall apart. So first they come across one of Perfection's own, this drunk guy who has died of dehydration at the top of an electrical tower. He's too scared to come down. He's got his rifle on him, but he kind of has this horrified look on his face and just died of dehydration. Still determined to leave, that's not going to stop them. They get back in their car only to stumble upon a local sheep farmer who they find beheaded of sorts, and all of his sheep are killed. So at this point, they're like, okay, we need to call the authorities, I guess. So they hurry back to Perfection. They go to the grocery store and they try to call for help, but the phone is down. So then the residents of the town, they're like, you know what? Go to Bixby, see if you can get us some help. We'll hold down the fort here and we'll be on the alert. We're looking for the crazy person that is killing everybody. So the residents send them back out to get to Bixby, and then they're stopped at a construction site. There was a rock slide blocking the road and two dead workers. I should also point out they actually stop at the home of the doctor and his wife, who we mentioned in the rundown of who's in the movie. They were actually building a house in the area, and Val and Earl go to their new homestead and they hear a radio, and they don't know where it's coming from, only to find that something has sucked the entire car down into the ground. The radio is still playing and the doctor and his wife are gone. So they don't last very long either. So they're trying to get out. They come to this construction site. There is a rock slide they're not able to get through, but they also find two dead construction workers. So as they are trying to get away, they're turning around to go back to Perfection. Their truck gets caught up on something and they really have to rev it and kind of rock it back and forth and then gun it to get it free. So they make it back to Perfection. They make it back to the store. And they notice that there is this thing hanging under the car, this worm-like creature attached to it. So now they've got a situation. They know that something else is going on. It's not a crazy madman, which is one thing. So it's not a serial killer. They don't have to worry about that, but they do have to worry about monsters. So next they try a horse escape, but that doesn't work either. They are kind of chased by the creature. They discover that it is actually under the ground, and they manage to kill it. There's like, I don't know, some kind of a trench in the middle of nowhere that I don't know what it's for. I would assume water of some sort, but there's no water because it's the desert. And they try to jump across the expanse, and it's cement on both sides of the expanse. And then the creature doesn't realize that hits the cement, and it kind of squishes him and he falls out. So they're like, okay, they discover then that the thing that was on the bottom of the truck is actually part of a bigger creature. The thing on the truck actually comes out of the creature's mouth and grabs unsuspecting and defenseless prey. So while they're investigating this creature that they've just killed, the local student who geologist who is studying with seismographs, she just happens to be in the area, finds them because she had had a lot of action on the seismograph, so she was kind of walking around to see what was causing it. And Earl and Val and her Rhonda determined that there are probably still three creatures out there as she looks at her graphs that she has collected from the seismographs in the area. And so they have to find a way back to Perfection, and they have to get the whole town into the mountains, out of Perfection, where the Graboids, as they are so wonderfully named, can't get them, because they're discovering that it can move through the sand of the desert, but it can't go through rocks. So they always climb onto a rock to keep themselves safe, so they're trying to get to the mountains. And I'm not going to spoil it how it ends. You can probably guess how it ends. But that is Tremors, with a lot of humor and Kevin Bacon thrown in. So here are my thoughts. I've got a lot. I would actually love to do this like a watch with someone, and we kind of go back and forth on this. My favorite part of this entire movie is not the monsters, not the chases, not the action. Even though I am an action lover, I do enjoy that. It is wondering about this town, this Perfection, Nevada, and its residents. How everybody got there, why they decided to settle there in the first place, how they have utilities all the way out in the middle of nowhere that are keeping them alive. I mean, I can see farmers, I suppose. They're not all farmers. How did Nancy and Mindy, an artist who has a very young daughter, Mindy, how did they end up in Perfection, Nevada? There is no school. I mean, it's four or five buildings, a few homes and the store, and that is it. And most of those homes are also trailers. And so it's not like a settled place. So how did everybody end up there? And it gets even more confusing because you have this dude named Nestor, who, again, all we know about him is, one, he's going to make a really stupid decision, and spoiler, he's not going to make it. He's going to get sucked down by the Graboid. And two, that he was supposed to do something the next day, that Earl and Val at the very beginning of the movie. That's all we know, but he just seems to be wandering around this town. There's this young guy, Melvin, but he's like 15, 16. He has no parents. What is he doing in this town? He does not seem to be related to anybody. He is not related to Nancy and Mindy. We know that for sure. He does not appear to be related to Nestor, only because when Nestor does find his, gets to his demise, Melvin's upset, but only because he watched it, not necessarily like, oh my goodness, that was my dad, and he never even says that. You've got Walter, who set up this store. How often does he get supplies? How does he call for supplies if the phone doesn't work? how is it not specifically just what those people want? Who's coming in and just shopping? How are they not just saying, here's my order, Walter, and he's just ordering those things? I don't understand small town grocery stores. At one point, he buys the part of the worm that was on the bottom of the truck from Earl and Val and then charges the residents of Perfection, again, which is another 9 people to take pictures of it. And they do it. And that just... I find to be highly amusing. Then you've got Bert and Heather, the preppers. They make the most sense to me. They do not live right in town. They live a little bit of way. You can see them through binoculars. They've kind of set up their own compound. They've got all of their weapons, all of, you know, that is how they're surviving. I don't know how they're making money. I don't know how anybody's making money. How does anybody have money to buy anything at Walter's store? I could go on and on, but this is why I love this movie so much. Who are these people and how did they get there? And I have a feeling that that is not what the prequel sequel is about, that it's really about the Graboids themselves. But I want more. I need more about this town. And then you have Earl and Valentine, who have the best bromance. They argue a little bit. You have Earl, who's kind of the wise sage of the group, even though he's not all that wise, but he encourages the younger Valentine, especially when it comes to women, which is very interesting because there's no women in this town, no available women. But what is the origin of their bromance? Were they, I kind of feel like maybe one or both of them were cowboys at one time. But I don't know how they met and how they decided to settle in Perfection together to make money and why they thought they could make enough money to survive in Perfection. Oh, just have a lot of questions. Another thing that I really like about the movie is that we don't talk about the creatures. People keep asking Rhonda, like, what is this? Where do you think this came from? Because she is the most intelligent academic in the group. She's the scientist. And she's like, why are you asking me? I don't know what this is. Nobody's ever seen anything like this before. But the conversation stops there. We have no contextual information about where these Graboids came and why they're there and why they're active all of a sudden. Did they just get there? Had they been dormant for a while? Where would they go next? We don't get any of that. And I actually like that we don't need, that's not the point. The point is they're here. And now how are these people going to survive? My other questions include, so Rhonda, Earl and Val meet Rhonda out in the middle of nowhere they're on the road and they see her car in the distance and they're like, oh, that new scientist was supposed to be here, and they go introduce themselves. But it does not seem that Rhonda is staying in town. So where is Rhonda staying? Is she camping? Is she camping alone? How is that working? Where did she think she was going to get her own supplies? I'd like to know more about Rhonda. And so then, as mentioned, as they are leaving Bixby, Earl and Valentine, they stumble upon the dude that is caught up in the electrical tower. And Val, they do rock, paper, scissors. Valentine and Earl do that a lot when they're arguing about who should have to do what. And so Valentine loses, Kevin Bacon loses. He has to climb up the tower, discovers that the gentleman is dead. And then the next scene is cut that they're at the doctor's house because the doctor and his wife are still alive at this point. And they're like, what do you think happened? How did they get that man down? And then they get in their car and they just continue on to Bixby. What was the doctor going to do with this body? He did not also get in the car with the dead body and drive to Bixby. Did they just bury this gentleman? What happened to this guy? I would like to know that. What did the doctor do with him? And it's just a lot of unanswered questions. Does any of this stop me from enjoying the movie? No. It is actually what helps me enjoy the movie more. All of these really ridiculous questions that don't need to be answered to enjoy the movie, but they've created this atmosphere of curiosity about this town and these people. And that's why you want so badly for them to get out and get free, because you're cheering them on, you're rooting them on. Oh, I just love it. And that's all. That's all of my thoughts and questions. I don't know if that is encouragement to watch the movie or not, but so it goes. A few interesting tidbits. So Kevin Bacon originally it is said in interviews, resented being in Tremors, only agreeing to do it because he needed money for his new marriage and upcoming newborn child. When the film was not financially successful, Bacon feared his career was over, and in the following years would refuse to acknowledge the film's existence and even called it the worst thing I ever did. However, Bacon would eventually come round to Tremors, calling the filming of Tremors to be the single most fun time I've ever had making a movie in my entire career, and that was in 2012. But then he later admitted in 2020 in an interview, when I was making Tremors, I was very depressed and at a low point in my life, and I kind of blamed Tremors for all that. I was bitter against it. I thought it was a career killer. I never watched my movies more than once. Some of my movies I've never seen before, and I have no desire to, but I've watched Tremors a dozen times. I love it so much, and I spent years trying to capture the same energy we had on the set of Tremors. It's one of my favorite films of all time. So he kind of went back, you're like, oh, in this interview, maybe he's changed his mind again, but he loves it. And that makes me love Kevin Bacon even more. And I just love that he kind of looks to live in the country now with his own farm and goats and likes to just sing songs and do dances with his family. And that makes me very happy. One idea by the special effects crew was for worms to have an outer shell. When above the dirt, the shell would retract to reveal a slimier inner worm. However, many production members started to giggle at the phallic resemblance it had with a foreskin, so this was changed to the big worm sprouting several smaller worms from its mouth, which I think was kind of the creepier, scarier version to do that. This was the first film as an actress for country music singer Reba McEntire. I actually really love her in this role. I think she does an excellent job. I was also a huge fan of her TV show, Reba. So I'm a little biased. And 90s country music, which I attribute a lot in my mind to Reba McEntire as well, is, much like Tremors, my music safe space. So when I am stressed out, when I am angry, when I just need to turn off my brain, I start to listen to 90s country music and the world gets better. That is not the only thing I listen to. I don't have completely terrible choice in music, I don't think, but I have pretty bad taste in music. I really love 90s country music. I could do a whole podcast about that. My favorite 90s country tunes. I think I might have to do that. Test audiences loved the film, but would repeatedly chant, kiss her, at the end of the movie. So the studio paid for a quick reshoot featuring Valentine and Rhonda kissing, which is kind of a fun little element to the movie. You have Earl making fun of Valentine because he's always going for the stereotypically gorgeous girl who is not Rhonda. Rhonda wears sunscreen on her nose, hiking boots and shorts. She just looks the part of the goofy, nerdy academic. But as Valentine is around her more, he sees her resilience and her sense of adventure and her intelligence. He starts to fall for her a little. They have some chemistry. They end up kissing at the end of the movie. It's wonderful. So I guess I just spoiled it a little bit. Those two don't die. And finally, the original screenplay included an additional perfection resident named Viola, who was a nagging and hateful old lady who mostly stayed to herself. She also had an aggressive Rottweiler that barked constantly. She meets her demise during the first attack when a graboid breaks through the floor of her house and eats her off screen. It has never been officially stated as to why her character was excluded from the film. I'm actually kind of glad she wasn't in there because of the dynamic of the town of perfection. I would not have liked her. I think you need to actually like all of the characters. Even though Melvin is annoying, he is the annoying teenager. So you kind of like him. You get why he's annoying. He's out in the middle of nowhere with all of these adults who think he's just a spazoid. And so you like him a little bit. Plus he offers some humor as well. So does this movie hold up? It really actually does. And it does for one big reason outside of Kevin Bacon and Burt Ward. They use practical effects. There's no CGI, which I absolutely love about it. So they build the town of perfection. The only indoor scenes are at the store or at Burt and Heather's house in their compound. So everything is outside. They do an amazing job with the graboids themselves. I mean, they are definitely monsters, and they're definitely campy, but they're not cheesy, if that makes sense. They do look real. They do look threatening. just a really well-made 90s movie that is a lot of fun. Movie night recommendations. This one was a little trickier because how do you have to have the right kind of horror and the right kind of comedy. And the comedy has to definitely outweigh the horror. And I thought of two different movies. The first one really kind of lacks the horror, but it's more that thriller adventure. There's some tension in it, and that's going to be The Fifth Element. If you want to hear me talking more about The Fifth Element, that's episode 138. That's another one of my favorite comfort movies, but it has that same kind of light feel with characters that you really start to like and enjoy. The other one is just stupid, but it's the right kind of stupid. If you like the campy, cheesy movies, and that is Starship Troopers. So humans in a fascist, militaristic future wage war with giant alien bugs. I think that seems very like Tremors and would make an excellent double feature. Book recommendations, though. Again, this one is a little tricky. I tried to go with the same kind of, there's some tension, horror, but it's mostly humor, because I could not find or think of another one about alien creatures in the ground that are going to come out and get you. And most of the ones that you do go in that realm tend to lean more heavy on the scary and the tension as opposed to the humor. So I picked out Starter Villain by John Scalzi. I have not read this one yet, but the cover alone, it has a cat in a suit on it. it's like a portrait. Is enough to get me to read it. So it is on my to-be-read list. When his long-lost uncle dies, leaving him his supervillain business, Charlie, as rich, soulless predators backed by multinational corporations and venture capital come after him, finds going bad looking pretty good with unionized dolphins, hyper-intelligent talking spy cats, and a terrifying hench person at his side. Or you could go a different route. You could do Pride and Prejudice and Zombies by Seth Graham Smith, which I have actually read. A mysterious plague has fallen upon the quiet English village of Meryton, and the dead are returning to life. Feisty heroine Elizabeth Bennet is determined to wipe out the zombie menace, but she's soon distracted by the arrival of the haughty and arrogant Mr. Darcy. I loved the book. It was just different, and I like the take on a classic novel, turning it on its head. But I also really, really enjoyed the movie with Lily James. It just is funny. I was just crying with laughter in the theaters and cheering Elizabeth Bennet on because it's just ridiculous. And I believe Watson and Jessica went with me to see that. And we were the only three laughing in the movie. Theater. We got really into it. And one other one that's kind of quirky is Welcome to Night Vale by Joseph Fink. This is based on a podcast called Welcome to Night Vale. I listened to a bit of the podcast. I have not read the book, but it's this handed a message by a mysterious man. A young pawn shop owner embarks on a psychologically dangerous mystery that entangles her in the life of the local PTA treasurer who helplessly watches her son's growing obsession with his absent father. What is so cool about Welcome to Night Vale is that you are just basically walking through this town. And so I think that is kind of what makes me think of Perfection, because I love the town so much. So as you're walking through the town, you're noticing all of the kind of mundane things that are happening, but there's this also other plot kind of happening underneath. And that is all I have for today. I talked for a very long time. If you can tell, if you can't tell, I'm a little bit obsessed with this movie. Please watch it. And if you watch it, please come back to my Instagram or my Facebook and let me know what you thought. I would love to know your feelings about Tremors. Thank you so much for listening. Really, it is so appreciated. If you haven't already, I hope you subscribe so that we can keep going on this journey together. And if you've got the time, it would be awesome if you could rate and review so that other individuals just like you who are listening, who like random conversations about pop culture with someone, me, who doesn't really know what they're talking about, well, those new people can join in on the fun as well. And if you hit subscribe, it'll just automatically pop into your feed, so you're never going to miss an episode. Or if you want to share the podcast, just share it with people. That would be awesome too. You can follow me on Instagram and Facebook as A Bit of Fun with Emily. Go have yourself a bit of fun today, and I will see you.